Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Leading Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
We have plenty to unpack tonight, Laura, including the legislature's action last week involving LGBTQ gender-affirming care, bathrooms, teaching about sexual orientation in school, and the governor's big state reorganization plan. But first, we are going to start with what's going on in eastern Iowa right now as we go on the air on this Monday night. Former President Donald Trump is in Davenport right now speaking to an appreciative crowd there. It was billed as a speech on educational policy, but as of a few minutes ago, he had not mentioned education at all since he started speaking at 6:15 Central Time. And it's been a traditional Trump campaign speech, Laura, ad-libbed stream of consciousness. So far, among other things, he said no one has ever done more than he did for farmers. He said President Biden has waged nonstop war against farmers. He said within hours of becoming president again, Trump, he will cancel every Biden policy that he said was harming farmers. He said no one has stood up to China like he did. He called the 2020 election a disgrace. And derided President Biden's campaign from what Trump called his basement. He's also ripped into Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. So here we are, the former President Trump in Davenport, giving the type of speech we became used to years ago.
Yes, and he hasn't been here for a while. I saw that there were people lining up outside the building already this morning to hear him. So it's interesting that he can still draw a significant crowd in Iowa. But it's also interesting when Ron DeSantis was here, he wasn't directly criticizing Trump, but Trump is apparently feeling the pressure if he's already talking about the Florida governor.
As you mentioned, Ron DeSantis came to Iowa last week, also to Davenport, and he had his own message, perhaps a little bit more refined, if you will, and more on focus than what the president, former President Trump, is saying right now as I watch him live on C-SPAN. But DeSantis railed against woke ideology, said it had infected American institutions such as education, healthcare, and business. That's going to be his real big deal at the culture war.
Definitely. DeSantis is not officially, of course, a declared presidential candidate, but it's obvious he is going to be running for president. He was technically promoting a book and touting his accomplishments as governor. And you may ask, why Davenport? Well, the Quad Cities area, which is part of Scott County, that is the third largest county in Iowa. It's a television market that reaches a significant number of people in eastern Iowa. And Republicans are really on the ascendancy in Scott County. So you're going to see a lot of presidential candidates doing events in Davenport-Bettendorf area for that reason.
DeSantis is also right now testing messages with Republican activists in Iowa.
Yes, I always enjoy a political polling story. And one of my contacts last week sent me the questionnaire. This was something that was distributed by text. It's not clear exactly the universe it went out to. It was probably people who either had donated to past Republican campaigns or perhaps they attended past Republican presidential candidate events and put their names and numbers on a sign-in sheet. But anyway, it was a fairly detailed poll with a lot of questions. If you knew this or that about Ron DeSantis, would it make you more or less likely to vote for him? So it included a number of things that you mentioned, the woke, the fact that he opposed COVID lockdowns, he tried to get kids back in school, the fact that he took on Disney supposedly for its woke ideology and what he's been doing in education. But there was a line in there that mentioned that DeSantis is a younger person who would pose the best contrast to 80-year-old President Biden. And it didn't mention Trump in that context, but it made me wonder, is that something that Ron DeSantis might try to position himself against Trump as obviously a significantly younger candidate than Trump?
Meanwhile, last week, former South Carolina governor and former UN ambassador Nikki Haley made her second trip to Iowa since her presidential announcement, spending 3 days there last week. And among other things, she said China seems to be a bogeyman in this coming election. She said China needs to be held accountable by the international community for the spread of the coronavirus. She did not say what that accountability would look like, but she gave a rather aggressive speech involving China, talked about Ukraine. So she was trying to establish her bona fides as a hawk, a no question, a Republican hawk.
And this is the Republican-controlled House of Representatives in Washington has created a select committee on the Chinese Communist Party. U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson, who represents most of Northeast Iowa, she has talked a lot over the last year or so about taking on the Chinese Communist Party. So there is definitely, I think that this is an avenue that Nikki Haley maybe feels as former UN ambassador. This is something where she can talk about foreign policy. I'm not sure. First of all, I don't know that that issue sets her apart from anyone else in the Republican field. And I also think that historically, Iowa caucus goers are not primarily motivated by foreign policy issues. But certainly, as you say, this seems to be a message that she's testing out.
Now, just about everybody expects Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, to jump into the race. In fact, you could take bets on it and you wouldn't win a lot of money because everybody would bet in favor of that happening. And a new Iowa poll seems to confirm what virtually every presidential insider analyst thinks, that DeSantis appears to be the main and perhaps only challenger to Trump. The Iowa poll out this weekend showed that to be the case.
Yes, this was, and to be clear, this was not exactly a poll where they said, who are you going to caucus for if the caucuses were held today? But it was a poll of self-identified Republicans in Iowa asking them what their feelings were, very favorable, somewhat mostly favorable, or mostly or very unfavorable, or not have an opinion. And I thought this was a pretty good poll for Ron DeSantis, frankly, considering that he hasn't been here much and hasn't been in the public eye as much as some people. He had 42% of the respondents had very favorable feelings, 33% somewhat favorable. So really about almost three quarters of the sample felt good about Ron DeSantis. 20% didn't know enough about him to have an opinion. Donald Trump's numbers were a little bit higher. Of course, with Donald Trump, he's universally known, right? So 44% favorable, 36%, 44% very, 36% mostly favorable. So he had about 80% favorable numbers, a slightly under 20% unfavorable, and basically almost nobody not having an opinion about Donald Trump. But Ron DeSantis was the only person who was really in the ballpark in terms of very favorable numbers that were pretty close to the former presidents among, again, self-identified Republicans in Iowa.
Former President Trump is still speaking in Davenport as we speak, and we will have everything that he said, or at least the most important things, next Monday night live here on Capitol Week. And of course, I can't be monitoring President Trump because I'm on the air with you, and I'd rather That's be right. you doing this. All right. Let's get into what the state legislature did last week. Oh, my, did the state legislature do some things last week, and they were controversial. Let's start with the state Senate and House both approving a ban on gender-affirming medical care for transgender youth.
So this bill was fast-tracked. This had final legislative approval about 9 days after it was first published on the website, which is something that the Republican majority has typically only done with a few of their top priority issues. So this is a fairly broad-based ban. It's modeled on bills that have passed in other states, including Arkansas and Alabama. Iowa healthcare professionals could not provide puberty blockers, hormone therapy, or any kind of surgeries to Iowans under 18 if they were seeking that care for a gender transition reason. So the same medications would still be available to people with other conditions. For instance, children who go through puberty at an excessively young age could still be on puberty blockers, but not transgender children. And it would have some penalties for people who violate that ban. The Senate passed the bill along party lines on Tuesday, and then most House Republicans voted on it on Wednesday, voted to send it to the governor's desk. Actually, it has not been officially sent to the governor's desk. I just checked again before we went on the air. It's still sitting there in the legislature, so I'm not sure what that means. Usually the governor has to sign a bill within 3 days of it reaching her desk. So it may be that she has some specific date planned and they're holding off on sending it until just before that.
Republicans said they needed to protect transgender kids and their parents from making irreversible changes that they could regret. Democrats questioned whether the bill would violate the state's Civil Rights Act. So this one is going at some point to be challenged, isn't it?
Well, it definitely will be challenged because the Arkansas ban, which was the first state law, was passed in 2021, actually it was a veto override over the governor at the time vetoed the bill. And it was enjoined in federal court, federal lawsuit, and the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, which also includes Iowa, voted to uphold that injunction last summer. So it's extremely likely that, assuming Governor Reynolds signs this bill and everybody seems to expect her to sign it, that there will be a lawsuit filed very quickly and probably a temporary temporary injunction put to prevent the law from being enforced. It was an interesting debate in that Republican lawmakers who have normally said this legislative session that they want to put parents in charge of their children were arguing that in this case, parents shouldn't be able to make these decisions because they can't really make informed consent because these experimental supposedly treatments are potentially harmful to kids. And also it was an interesting bill because basically every public health and medical organization was registered against the bill. Every mainstream medical organization supports this gender-affirming healthcare for kids in an evidence-based way. And the groups that were supporting the bill are basically religious groups. So it is definitely going to be challenged as a potential equal protection violation, due process violation, and maybe even on freedom of religion grounds.
And while House Republicans were debating this and they advanced it on Wednesday, hundreds of protesters at the Capitol sang and chanted, pledged to keep fighting for LGBTQ rights, one of several protests we've seen around the state.
Yes. And as we mentioned during last week's show, there was a huge protest outside the Capitol last Sunday. And then many people, wasn't quite as large, but still quite a large protest, came back on Wednesday in time for the House debate. I do want to mention that there were six Iowa House Republicans who opposed this bill. Several of them spoke during the legislative debate on Wednesday, and their main angle on it was the parental rights angle, that they felt that this could be a real problem limiting parents' ability to make these decisions for their own kids. And while this bill was working its way through committee, a number of medical practitioners came to testify and told lawmakers that any hormones or puberty blockers are never prescribed without months and months of consultation, sometimes years of consultation, and everything happens with parental consent. Kids are not making any of these decisions on their own.
And while this was going on, the state Senate weighed in by approving a bill banning schools from letting people use school facilities such as bathrooms, locker rooms, or shower rooms that do not align with their assigned gender at birth. We can summarize this as it's a bathroom bill.
Yes, and this was another one that was fast-tracked. And similar to the gender-affirming care bill, this is a proposal that in the past has been introduced and never advanced in the Iowa legislature, and all of a sudden this year getting a lot of traction. And I should say that the Iowa Senate last Tuesday, I watched debate for about 6 hours straight. They debated so many significant bills on the same day. I'm not sure why they're cramming so many of these important bills all one after another, but it was a very emotional day in the Iowa Senate with a lot of, this is a bill that passed along party lines, and many Democrats standing up to speak against it and saying that this also likely would be found to be in violation of federal law and possibly even the U.S. Constitution because of the way it singles out a group of transgender children.
And while the Senate was talking about bathroom bills, the state House passed a bill that would bar schools from teaching about sexual orientation or gender identity in kindergarten through sixth grade. Seems to be a theme running through all of this.
Yes, and this is something, there have been several versions of this bill, so it's a little bit confusing to keep track. The governor in her education bill also proposed some similar language to this. Hers would go K through three, but she said she was open to extending that. So this is something they changed. There was an amendment to this bill that changed it. The original text said that there could not be instruction of any kind about sexual orientation or gender identity. And when this was in committee, a lot of Democrats expressed concern that almost anything could be considered instruction about gender identity, like boys and girls lining up separately to use the bathroom, for instance, or all kinds of things, talking about family structures, the fact that some families have a single parent, some have two moms or two dads. So in any case, they slightly changed it, but there still would basically be no curriculum or lessons related to sexual orientation or gender identity. And this is one, it has not gotten through the Iowa Senate yet, but it is expected that the Senate will approve something very similar to this. And Governor Kim Reynolds has already indicated that this is a change she would like to see to the school curriculum.
Democrats say that perhaps this is an overreach, all of this, but there was another new Des Moines Register poll released today, Monday, as we go live on Monday night, that shows 54% of Iowa adults say they favor bills that would ban teaching about gender identity. The same percentage say they favor legislation banning instruction on sexual orientation, and a slightly smaller number, 52%, say they favor a ban on gender-affirming medical treatment for minors.
So this poll was interesting in a few ways. First of all, given the amount of media coverage, and especially in the talk radio sphere in recent months about gender-affirming care, about bathrooms, transgender issues generally, I would have expected maybe even slightly larger support. This was slim majority support for these measures. And in both cases, the people, the respondents who opposed the measures are either 43 or 44%. So it was a fairly divided Iowa public about this. Also, the older respondents in the poll were slightly less likely to favor these bills, which I thought was interesting. But I felt that this survey validated a general strategy of the conservative movement nationally. You may remember about 20 years ago or so that Republicans in many states were trying to push bans, constitutional amendments banning same-sex marriage. They were trying to get those on as many state ballots as possible because they felt like that was an issue that worked in their favor. Over time, as public opinion became much more accepting of gays and lesbians having equal rights and marriage equality in particular, there has been a shift to targeting transgender people and transgender rights, transgender people being an even smaller minority group than the LGBTQ community generally. And so that is partly why I wasn't surprised to see this poll, but it does make you wonder, given how quickly public opinion shifted on issues like same-sex marriage, whether the same trend might unfold over the next 5 or 10 years on this issue.
Let's take a breath right now. 16 and a half minutes after the hour, we've been going fast. Wherever you're listening to us, you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. Yes, we're here every week at this time to talk politics, Iowa style, how it's affecting all of us. Last few weeks have been a whirlwind of discussion here as the legislature just slams through so many bills that we've been talking about in the last few weeks. Another one, the Senate last week passed Governor Reynolds' massive reorganization bill. This puppy is a mere 1,500 pages. We've talked about it many times. Democrats say it's a power grab. The governor says it's going to make things more efficient. Well, here we go.
So this was a long debate in the Senate that came before they even began debate on the gender-affirming care and bathroom bill. So as I said, it was a busy day in the Senate last Tuesday. But Democrats proposed just under a dozen amendments that Republicans voted down, all of them. But there were a few changes to the Senate bill. First of all, the Senate floor manager took out a provision that he had added to the governor's proposal that would have changed the number of votes you need in the Senate to confirm the governor's appointees. That was, he wanted to lower that from a two-thirds majority, 34 out of 50, to a three-fifths majority, 30 out of 50. And he agreed to take that out of the bill. As for the other controversial provisions that Democrats were trying to target, things such as the governor having control over the director of the Office for the Blind, the fact that the attorney general would have control over the Office of Consumer Advocate, the attorney general being able to take over criminal cases from county attorneys, the fact that the independent district regional level community-based corrections boards, which are currently locally governed, would all be consolidated under the State Department of Corrections. All of those amendments were voted down. But it does sound like there is some movement possibly in the Iowa House to consider a few of these amendments. And the Senate floor manager did say, in particular with the community-based corrections, that that was something he had heard a lot about when the bill was going through. And it was something that he understood that to some people was a valid concern, even though he advised his caucus to vote down the amendment.
Do you think that this is going to skate even with amendments? Is this going to be a given that it's going to be approved by the Iowa House and sent to the governor?
I think so, because this Republican legislature has definitely shown that they are not interested in being a real check on the governor's power. In the past, when there have been Republican trifectas, when Terry Branstad was governor in the 90s, there was a brief period where there was a Republican trifecta, and there was a little bit more back and forth, and the legislative leaders were a little more willing to assert legislative authority on things. But I don't really hear any significant opposition to this bill going to the governor. I think that there may be a few tweaks in the House. Again, a few of these provisions may be changed, but the there are some questions about how many jobs would be lost. But I think overall, there's no real political appetite for taking on the governor on this. I wanted to mention one last thing, that the power grab that is that the Democrats were talking about in many areas of state government, the governor would have more power to hire and fire people, more power over state boards. And many of those provisions were not in the consultant's recommendation on streamlining state government. An out-of-state consultant came up with a report that did recommend reducing the number of agencies from 37 to 16, and that is a core part of the bill. But many of the other provisions that increase the governor's power and the attorney general's power, that is something that the governor's staff added that didn't come from this consultant.
Let's talk about what else is happening in the state house and the state senate in whatever amount of time we have left, about 10 minutes. There is legislation moving in both the house and the senate that could cause thousands of Iowans to lose Medicaid coverage or federal food assistance through what's known as SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
Yeah, so we just didn't get to this one last week, but this has not been passed on the floor of either chamber, but it is through committee in both chambers, so through that first funnel. And there are a few differences between the House and Senate bills, but one, the core part that would be the same is that to qualify for federal food assistance, that's known as SNAP, there would be a new asset test, and only households with less than $15,000 in total assets would qualify. A house, a car, and a few other things would be exempted from that asset test, but it would be pretty strict. And most people who work in this field think that thousands of Iowans who currently qualify for SNAP would no longer be receiving them. There also could be some work requirements for Medicaid. Again, I haven't heard anything, neither of in the House and the Senate, they haven't put this on the floor debate calendar. So they may be trying to work behind the scenes on some kind of amendment to align the bills. But this is something the Senate has been working on for many years, and the House, and in the past, the House never was interested. But this year, there seems to be real political support for this idea in the Iowa House.
All right. It's widely known that Democrat Rob Sand, the state auditor, is the only statewide Democrat to hold office. So that our next story is somewhat of interest. The Senate passed a bill that would limit the state auditor's access to records for auditing purposes. Now, Sand is calling the bill the single most pro-corruption bill in Iowa history. No hyperbole there. Republicans say the bill is meant to protect Iowans' personal information. Does it look like a personal land grab against Sand?
Well, there was a real bait and switch with this bill. And I just want to say, I saw that this was on the agenda for the Senate State Government Committee at the last meeting that they held during the funnel week, where, again, bills need to get through a committee in either chamber to stay alive after the funnel. And I saw that there was a bill to limit the state auditor's authority. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I wonder what that's about. So I watched the meeting. At that time, the bill's author, manager, Michael Busolo, said that the main goal was to protect people's private information. And he cited things like their school records from state universities or medical records. And he made it sound like it was a very minor change to the law. And he did say there would be an amendment before it was considered on the floor. Well, they brought this thing to the floor on Tuesday, which again, Tuesday was the day they were also considering the state government reorganization, the bathroom bill, the ban on gender-affirming care. And then they bring this and there's an amendment, which is called a strike-after amendment, which means it replaces the entire bill, that suddenly changes the whole thing completely. So now, not only are there really broad limits on the information the auditor can obtain in the course of an audit, but now the auditor would not be able to go to court to enforce a subpoena. A state agency could refuse to hand over information they said was not relevant to the audit, and then it would go to this three-member arbitration panel, and the governor's designee would have the deciding vote on that panel. So it would really make it, when the auditor said this is a pro-corruption bill, what he was saying was anybody, any government entity that wanted to hide with any misuse of funds could just say, we're not handing that over. And then the governor's representative would be in a position to block a thorough investigation of her own administration. So it was hugely concerning. And again, the bill just completely changed right before it was debated on the floor. So it passed the Iowa Senate last week along party lines. The House State Government Committee hasn't taken it up yet. But state auditors around the country, Rob Sand got more than two dozen of them to sign a letter expressing concern about the limitations and the scope of audits that this bill would place.
Let's briefly talk about a couple of bills making their way through both the House and the Senate involving public information. First, the Senate Ways and Means Committee approved a bill that would create a new state website to publish notices and get rid of a longstanding requirement for city schools and other entities to publish the notices in newspapers. We've all seen those notices. Proponents said it's going to save money, but opponents said it's going to lead to a less informed public.
Well, this is something the Iowa Newspaper Association has been worried about for a long time. Bills like this have been introduced for years, so they've never gotten as much traction as it seems to have this year. And the Iowa Newspaper Association has estimated that as many as a third of the some 300 newspapers that remain around the state of Iowa could fold if this thing goes through. These public notices are a very significant source of revenue for local newspapers. And you might wonder, well, who really reads those notices? But if you talk to people in small towns and people who run newspapers, actually, a lot of people do. They will come in and ask questions, or they'll call the newspaper after they see something in a public notice. The way the bill would change it so that government entities could put this on a website, but it wouldn't necessarily remain publicly accessible forever. It might just be up on the website for a couple of weeks. And of course, there are still a lot of Iowans who don't have internet access. And so this is something that the media community is going to be fighting. I don't really have a sense of how much support it might have on the House side. But as you mentioned, it did get through the Senate Ways and Means Committee on party lines.
Meanwhile, last week, the House unanimously approved a bill designed to improve the process for those seeking public records from government bodies.
Yes, and this is, it's Sunshine Week this week. This is a week when media organizations try to highlight government transparency and access to information, and the House got this bill through just in time for Sunshine Week. The main concept is that government agencies would be required to promptly acknowledge that they received a request. They would have to respond to the person and say, "We got your request. Here's who's going to be handling it. Here's our estimate of how long it's going to take us to get you the records and how much it might cost. And also, if there's any delay later, then they have to inform the person." And this has been a real problem over the years, that some government bodies just ignore requests for weeks or months, and it's very difficult to get the records. And so this was a bill that was actually introduced by the Iowa Public Information Board, which is the state agency that enforces the open records law, because they have seen an increasing number of complaints that are related to this issue of government custodians just ignoring records requests.
And something we want to get to, and we may come back to more about the House, but I want to get to this bit about the governor appointing a new State Department of Education director, and it's somewhat interesting, his background.
Yes, Chad Aldis. He grew up in Iowa. He hasn't mostly worked in Iowa, but his current position is he's a vice president at a think tank that works on education reform. He has spoken to the Iowa legislature in the past in favor of private school initiatives and charter schools. And Democrats are already criticizing this appointment, saying that this is a guy who has no background in public education. It has been traditional for the director of the Department of Education to be somebody who has worked in some capacity in schools, either as a school teacher, administrator, a principal, perhaps somebody who served on a school board. And Chad Aldis is none of those things. He did grow up in Clinton in eastern Iowa, but he is somebody who has spent the bulk of his career advocating for private schools and private school choice more than public school. So there should be, I think, a lively debate over his confirmation in the Iowa Senate.
And with about a minute to go, the State House passed a bill last week changing the makeup of the State Board of Educational Examiners.
Yes, and this is another one of the things. Several state boards would be changed as part of that government reorganization bill, but this is separate from that. And this is something that basically would reduce the number of education school professionals on the board and create more positions on the board to be parents' representatives. And so it fits with the Republican overall agenda of giving parents more control of the public education system.
All right. What are you going to be looking at this week in the state legislature? What do you expect this week?
Well, I want to see what the House does, how quickly they seem to be moving on the state government reorganization bill. I want to see if there's any movement on the state auditor bill. I want to see what is happening. There are some differences. There are some other education bills where there are some differences in the language between the House and the Senate, and I'm not sure what's going to be going on there. It was a very light day today. There wasn't floor debate in either the Iowa House or Senate, so not sure what they're planning. And of course, I'll be looking to see whether the House takes up the bathroom bill. They did not take it up last week. And I do anticipate that Governor Reynolds will be signing that ban on gender-affirming care soon, but she has not yet received the bill.
Wow, we went through a lot tonight because there was a lot to go through.
There was a lot, and they even did a lot more, but we'll have time next week to discuss some of the other things they've passed.
We will, and former President Trump, as I look here on C-SPAN, still speaking in Davenport, As we approach the 7:30 hour Central Time Zone, Iowa time, 75 minutes into a speech, we'll see if he's actually talked about educational policy next week when we talk about his appearance there. Laura, you have a great week.
You too, Dennis.
We're out of time. You've been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio, your listening post for politics, Iowa style. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will indeed be back next week in this same time slot when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about